This is lecture 14. Any questions about the last lecture or two? We're going to switch now. In principle, we're going to switch from Wiener processes to Ornstein-Uhlenbeck processes, but they're not very far apart. So. Okay. So this is 5.3, Ornstein-Uhlenbeck processes. This will be our first excursion into processes defined on the whole real line. And the first thing I write down is a Wiener process. And you scream and yell because the Wiener process was defined on the half line, standard Wiener process. Well, I trick you by putting in an e to the 2t in there. And now as t runs over the real line, this is still a positive argument. So that's well defined for that. I put an e to the minus t in front. I put a 1 over square root 2, a nuisance factor I have to deal with. And I call that combination u of t in honor of Mr. Uhlenbeck. It's a new process. It defined over plus to minus infinity. Well, it inherits several properties straight away from the w. It inherits the fact that its average is everywhere zero, because the w was. And we can figure out what is the two-point correlation function. All right over here, that's 1/2 e to the minus t1 plus t2, expectation value w of e to the 2t1, w of e to the 2t2. It's e to the minus 1/2. No. 1/2 e to the minus t1 plus t2. We know how the Wiener process works. Its arguments, we pick the least of the arguments. But that actually follows the T1 and T2 pattern, because if T2 is a number bigger than T1, then e to the 2t will be bigger than e to the 2t1. So this is e to the 2t lesser. And this is really nothing but t lesser plus t greater. The t greater wins. To stay around, e to the minus t greater minus t lesser, for the answer is 1/2 e to the minus t1 minus t2 epsilon. So finally we say that the process is Gaussian because W was Gaussian, and that gives us all the information that we need to define the Ornstein-Uhlenbeck process. It's useful to note right now that this is the Fourier transform of something. E to 1/2 e to the minus t1 minus t2 is 1 over 2 pi plus to minus infinity e to the I omega t1 minus t2 d omega divided by 1 plus omega squared. Familiar Cauchy type integral. Okay, so what is our regular characteristic functional? E to the I integral S of t, u of t this time, dt, bless you. Now my integrals run from plus to minus infinity. T is in the whole real line. Well, it's Gaussian, mean zero, so it's normal. The only thing that counts is e to the minus 1/2 integral, double integral if you like, S of t1, S of t2,
expectation value UT1, UT2, DT1, DT2. It's equal to e to the minus 1 quarter, S of T1, S of T2, e to the minus absolute T1 minus T2, DT1, DT2. Using this property of Fourier transform of this kernel, we can write that as e to the minus 1/2, the Fourier transform of our test function S at omega absolute squared d omega divided by 1 plus omega squared. I'm going to write the linear functional form, the casual form for the form of the path integral first. We'll come back to the fact that this was satisfied by the Bochner-Minlos theorem. But this is our linear functional way to look at these things. We can do that first, if we like, in terms of the Fourier transform variables. So that's S tilde of omega complex conjugate, X tilde of omega d omega. All I've done is taken S of t times X of t and put it in Fourier space. Minus 1/2 integral 1 plus omega squared X tilde of omega quantity squared d omega, and then d of X tilde. So I've written in our linear functional physicist language using the Fourier transform of our variable. I can straight away put that back into our real-time version, coefficient of normalization, S of t, X of t dt, minus 1/2 integral X dot squared of t plus X squared of t dt curly dx. This is how the basic measure appears. We have a Wiener measure type term plus an extra type term here. And all of these integrals run from plus to minus infinity. Okay. Now, this formula right here, all of these things are going to be equal, but we've got enough equal things already, so let's start a new line. The characteristic functional, which is equal to that, e to the minus t1 minus t2, dt1 dt2. We invoke the Bochner-Minlos theorem, and this quantity will satisfy that. So that means that this is indeed the Fourier transform on some Bornstein-Uhlenbeck measure. This is the mathematical way to say it. This is the physicist's way to say it. And just to remind you what the positivity condition in the Bochner-Minlos theorem is in this case, it says take different functions sj, sk, coefficients alpha complex conjugate alpha j, alpha k, sum on j and k from 1 to finite number cap n, and that should be greater than or equal to 0. We used to talk about t as the argument of these things when we were talking about a single random variable.
I don't want you to get confused by this T as being relevant in this situation. This is the only thing the characteristic function depends on is the functions. It doesn't depend on T, which is a variable that has been integrated out. Okay. Now suppose we want to add a potential. To this problem. Well, let's do it our cheap and dirty way. We will integrate V with our functional derivative acting on we can do it in two different ways. Let's start with the linear functional way. Again, here's my normalization. This potential comes in. This sees this as an eigenfunction. The functional derivative gives me an I xt. That I kills exactly with that I. At that point, it is then supposed to be this integral, e to the minus integral v of x of t dt minus 1/2 x dot squared of t plus x squared of t dt dx. We can also write down the answer in our more mathematically inclined way. S of t, x of t, dt, exponential, e to the minus v of x of t, dt, times the Ornstein Ulam vector. We ask ourselves, what is the limit on this integration here of the v? Well, everything else has been plus to minus infinity. Suppose we assume that it also is plus to minus infinity. Here we run into a trouble. This trouble can be seen from the following. This process is stationary because if we shift the arguments of s by tau, that would cancel here. So this is invariant under time translations. Moreover, it is ergodic. Ergodic was the condition that this kernel, then, since it was stationary, had to depend on the time difference, was indeed the Fourier transform of an absolutely continuous measure. There it is, absolutely continuous. If you wanted to put yourself to the test, you can take S of t plus tau, I think we called it u of t before, and put this in as a substitution. So that's t1. And do the same thing for S of t2 plus tau plus u of t2 dt1 dt2. And you will see as tau goes to infinity, these processes decouple because the possible overlap between this guy and this guy involves effectively e to the minus tau, which is going to zero as tau goes to infinity. So this is ergodic as well. I told you that if we have an ergodic process, that we have a ability to make the entire characteristic function out of a single path. The rule was take e to the I s of t plus tau x of t dt, integrate d tau plus to minus cap t, divide by 1 over 2t, and take the limit as cap t went to infinity, that's limit in mean, and that became no longer a stochastic variable, a random variable, it became a deterministic variable, which indeed was the characteristic function. Change the characteristic function, you change the support of the process. Two different characteristic functions have
disjoint support, mutually inequivalent. Okay. If I'm going to put in an entire V history here from plus to minus infinity, I have suddenly made a new stationary and probably ergodic process out of this, which cannot be equivalent to the previous process. It has to be mutually singular. That means I am not allowed to have a bona fide mathematically correct multiplier of one measure to make the second measure. It is true that this quantity, with this formal, informally written this way, will also, where's my S? My S should still be here. E to the I, S of T, X of T, dt. This will still satisfy the Bochner-Minlow's theorem. So there is some measure over here, D measure V on top of Bornstein-Uhlenbeck of X. But these two measures live on disjoint sets. They cannot be written with a multiplier. How do we handle that? We handle it by saying, let me go first to a finite level of integration, finite interval of time. Now, this is not going to be a stationary process because I put in particular moments of time involved. Therefore, it can't be ergodic. Therefore, this has the potential to be equivalent to this. So that means this is a bona fide measure multiplier. And then to get my answer at the end, I must take the limit as t goes to infinity. And as we will see much later in the course, we have to do that in special ways. We have to ensure that as t goes to infinity, we haven't lost normalization. And so we may have to divide by what we want to be unity, which is s equals 0. So we would divide by the same expression in which the s is out. That's just a number I'm putting in, a number which rescales that, so that I do end up with a bona fide measure at the end on the new process. Okay, those are all shades of little goodies to come and which will be heavily important when we get to analogs of field theory. Okay, that's Ornstein-Uhlenbeck process. We'll meet it again very soon. Let's turn our attention to 5.4, which is realization. This is not in your syllabus, something new, realization of general Gaussian processes. We started our conversations long ago by introducing a sequence of random variables, xn, say n equals 1 to infinity. Let's take them normal. So that means their averages are 0. We'll take them independent. So then when n and m are different, their average is 0. And I will take them all identical. So we have identical, independently distributed variables. And I will just arrange that coefficient to be in front to be unity, nm. So that's going to be a Kronecker delta nm. So I have a collection of Gaussian, as I call it, normal random variables, mean zero, and a fixed variance for each of them. Okay. Now I use those as tools in building a general process. The general process is given by the following form. Summation n equals 1 to infinity over those friendly set of random independently distributed variables, Gaussian variables, xn, times suitable coefficients
u n of t, these are C number functions, plus some function m of t, which will play the role of our mean. So let's look at what x of t is. Since the average of all the x's is itself zero, the only thing that survived is my function m of t. That's all the role it plays, is to give me a mean value. And the next thing I want to talk about is the second moment. In fact, let's not quite talk about the second moment itself. We'll talk about the connected second moment, which is, I remind you, the real second moment function minus the product of the separate averages. Well, the means we already know, that's just our mt. So this subtracts off the m squared part, not important. And we could focus on this. And that is represented in our language up here as a double sum, n and m equals 1, this goes to infinity, un of t1, um of t2, expectation value xn with xm, end of expectation value. Let us use this known or assumed value for that correlation function. And that becomes a Kronecker delta. So our two sums collapse to one sum. And that becomes n equals 1 to infinity un of t1 un of t2. Nowhere have I said that the functions un are an orthonormal sequence. They need not be at all, and I don't want them to be. They are at my disposal to choose the un function to be what I want. And in fact, I choose it to give the desired behavior to my connected moment. I will give you some examples of how that works out in practice. Let's start with the Wiener process. For the Wiener process, I do start initially with an orthonormal family of functions. I'm going to have a collection of functions like this. And the property I want from those is that hn of t, hn of t prime, sum n equals 1 to infinity, is a direct delta function t minus t prime. They are not the u's, but the u's are constructed from those. Okay. Now, let's put this to use for us. As we define our Wiener process, sum n equals 1 to infinity, xn times the integral 0 to t of hn of t prime. So I use my orthonormal family of functions hn, and I integrate them from 0 to t. That makes my un of t's. So these things are the un of t's in this particular process, and the function m of t is actually 0. Well, at t equals 0, that collapses to 0. It satisfies that property of the Wiener process. It surely satisfies the mean. Zero. It's Gaussian because it's a linear sum of Gaussian variables. All we have to do is compute our two-point function, and that becomes, now I'm not going to put in the double sum and the x average because we already know what that does for us. That brings it down to a single sum, n equals 1 to infinity, 0 to t, hn t prime dt prime 0 to t2
H and a T double prime, the T double prime. Do the sum, and that becomes the double integral, 0 to T1, 0 to T2, using exactly that property, then I get a direct delta function of T delta T prime minus T double prime, dt prime, dt double. So that's our integral to be done. Let me make a little plot here, a graph. Let's assume that T1 is the larger of the two. So here is 0, here is T1, that's larger. Here is 0, this is T1 out here. But that's T2, some smaller number. One of those integrals runs out to 0 to T2. The other runs all the way out to 0 to T1. So the rectangle I'm talking about is this rectangle. I'm never in that region at all. This says the T prime should equal T double prime. So that's the 45 degree line in there. This says that when I evaluate this delta function and use it to absorb one of the integrals, I only go out to the minimum between T1 and T2. That's as far as I can go. There will be no contribution out here from that delta function because T2 never has reached that point. And so my answer is minimum T1, T2, which is exactly what we need to complete our demonstration that this is a definition of the Wiener process. I didn't tell you which orthonormal set of functions to use on the real line. In fact, you used it on the half line. That's up to you to choose. And they would all correspond to equivalent Wiener presses. Remember our friend equivalence? They had the same moments, so the same stochastic properties, but they were point-wise unequal to each other. What about our friend Orenstein-Uhlenbeck, our new friend Orenstein-Uhlenbeck? So this is an example also, Orenstein-Uhlenbeck. I once had the privilege of talking with Uhlenbeck and asking him why the process was called the way it was called, Orenstein-Uhlenbeck, because the paper is written with Uhlenbeck first. The paper is Uhlenbeck-Ornstein. And his immediate answer was, well, he was the far the more famous person at the time. So I think things tend to gravitate that way in naming. You put your famous person first, perhaps. Anyway, I have on occasion called it the Uhlenbeck-Ornstein process, and people say, what are you talking about? So I gave that up. Okay. This is a mean zero guy. Xn un of t. That's all that's left. What I have to do now is define for you the functions un of t that will play the game. So I'm going to borrow these functions hn of t. And I'm going to Fourier transform them to functions hn tilde of omega like that. So now I have a collection of these guys. Now these guys can be complex. This guy is real, but these are in general complex. So my u of t is defined as 1 over square root 2 pi integral
hn of omega tilde square root 1 plus omega squared e to the minus I omega t d omega.
Does that u have an n? Is it a un? Or is it just...
Yes, thank you so much. Okay.
Let us now look at un t1, un t2, sum on n, which is the basic property of interest. That's going to be my two-point function. So that's 1 over 2 pi hn of omega tilde 1 plus omega squared, then there's a summation here, e to the minus I omega t1, let's say, omega. Then I have to introduce a representation for the second guy. And for him, I'm going to take the complex conjugation. He's real over here. But when I, the, so the reality, it doesn't matter that I do that, except I will get a different set of signs over here, 1 plus omega prime squared d omega prime. Now I use the sum on the n property. It's going to be complex conjugate there, sorry. I get a delta function of the two omegas. And that forces the two omegas to become equal to each other. In a moment, it will. Doing one of those integrals leaves me with 1 over 2 pi. It sets omega equal to omega prime, so this becomes 1 plus omega squared e to the I omega t2 minus t1 upstairs d omega. That is my summation of the un t1 un t2. And as we've already advertised, that is my proper correlation function. So that's the illustration for the Ornstein-Uhlenbeck process. Here is an example of a family of U's which don't do the trick. Let's take up the question on generalized stochastic processes. It's supposed to be small letter. So far, we've been talking about point-wise stochastic processes. Everything makes sense at a point T. Generalized stochastic processes are distributions. Their correlation functions are typically distributions. What I want to do now is to take the time derivative of the Wiener process. This is not a point-wise function. It's not continuous. It is a distribution, generalized function. And if I take the time derivative in this representation, then I get a representation for that time derivative, which is nothing but xn times hn of t. I will call that n of t, like a noise. Indeed, it will be a representation of the famous white noise. So let's find the statistical properties of this guy. Average n of t follows from the average of these x's to be 0. N of t1, n of t2. Now these are distributions. Properly, distributions should be integrated against test functions. You can do that if you like, but I want to display what it really is.
Again, the same trick works. We multiply these two together. We take the expectation value. The expectation value, the two x's, will give me a Kronecker delta. So I get a single sum of hn of t1, hn of t2, which we have already said must satisfy the condition that it be a delta function. As such, if I evaluate this at the same point, say t1 equal to t2, in that moment is tight. That's a normal process. Normal process whose second moment is infinity. We know from our earlier calculation that that further applies, that the values of this thing are literally infinity, almost there. How do you make sense on something like that? Well, it's a distribution. You have to integrate. If I integrate it against a test function, S of t1, S of t2, against N of t1, N of t2, dt1, dt2, and that becomes integral S of t1, S of t2, times delta of t1 minus t2, dt1, dt2,
okay.
And it becomes simply S of t1 squared dt, which is, for smooth S, going to be well defined. So that's how it should be handled. In particular, we can use that little piece of information to give you the characteristic function for this process. This is also called a delta correlated process. Delta correlated process. Added to this, what we call white noise. There's a little confusion among the younger generation. Everything that has this for a two-point function is white noise. You got to be a little bit more specific. This is Gaussian white noise. And there are other kinds of white noise as well. So there's not merely one and only one kind of white noise.
Okay, let's write down the characteristic function for this little guy.
E to the I S of T, N of T, dt, E to the minus 1 half, standard story, S of U, S of V, N of U, N of V, du, dv. We've already worked that equation out, so that S of t quantity squared dt. That's the answer. On the one hand, Faulkner-Minlow's tell us this satisfies all the requisite properties to be a characteristic function. So there is indeed a measure, and this is the Fourier transform of that measure, d mu, white noise, I leave the Gaussian term implicit, of x. What does that look like in our formal language of linear functionals? Normalization, e to the I s of t, x of t, minus 1 half x squared of t dt. Yes. We've already decided that the realization values for this process at every point are plus or minus infinity. So that, of course, this makes no sense because it's always plus infinity integrated. Now, this one can make sense because those pluses and minuses get a little averaged out by the S and get something decent out of it. But that's why this is formal. You'll also begin to notice
that I'm using the same N, but it probably means different things on different occasions. Okay. Okay. So, we have learned that N of t by our construction is dw of t dt. Conversely, we can say that w of t is the integral of white noise. In fact, that equation is still on the board. Here is our n, and if I integrate that from 0 to t, that's exactly white noise. No surprise there. Okay, let's start another little section called stochastic differential equations, AKA. For those of you foreign born, I remind you what that is. That's also known as, KNOW, known. I'm going to put it in quotations because it's not exactly the same. As Langevin equations. Let's look at our friend U of T, which we had moments ago. Which was our Ornstein-Uhlenbeck process. I'm going to take the differential of this equation, du of t. There's two time dependencies. One in front here, e to the minus t. If I take a differential of this, I'm going to get a dt times the original thing and a minus sign. So I get a minus u of t dt. That's when I take into account this term. What's left is I'm supposed to take a differential of this little beast. Well, that looks hard, so I'll just write that down for the moment. 1 over root 2, e to the minus t, the d of w of e to the 2t. Let's figure out what that is. Well, we know that, what do we know? We know that dw of t is n of t dt. So, dw of e to the 2t is n e to the 2t d of e to the 2t. This one I can do. The n of e to the 2t times 2 e to the 2t dt. Put that together with these other factors, and we learned that 1 over root 2 e to the minus t dw of e to the 2t is equal to root 2 e to the plus t n of e to the 2t dt. So we boiled our problem down to a study of that guy. What is he? Well, this guy has mean zero because he's white noise. And so let's talk about his second moment. So that's square root of 2 e to the t1, n of e to the 2t1 times square root of 2 e to the t2, n of e to the 2t2 average. The 2's come together and give me a 2. E to the t1 plus t2 comes outside, and then I have n of e to the 2t1, n of e to the 2t2.
This is white noise, not Brownian motion. So I get out of here a delta function of e to the 2t1 minus e to the 2t2. That's what this thing equals. Times e to the t1 plus t2 with a factor of 2 in front. Recall how delta functions work. You have to find a place where the argument is 0. This argument is only 0 when t1 equals t2. Otherwise, since they're both monotonic, they cannot be the same. And the argument will come from taking the derivative of one of those guys. So let's take the derivative of this guy. So that brings a 2, e to the 2t1, and then I can write t1 minus t2 after that. I remind you that delta of f of x, say with one point of 0, is delta of f prime, where that place is 0, that's x minus x0, which then comes outside delta of x minus x0, f prime of x0 in magnitude outside. That's the standard story. So we have reached this level in our case, 2 e to the t1 plus t2. And now bring this multiplier outside. It comes outside upside down. The 2's cancel. E to the t1 plus t2 divided by e to the 2t1 times delta of t1 minus t2. But t1 equals t2 is the only place of importance here. So this, I can set the t2 equal to t1, and they cancel. That is a direct delta function. Which means, shockingly enough, that this process, square root of 2, e to the t, n of e to the 2t, is equivalent to white noise. So I can go back to my original equation over here and replace this combination, which is all of this. I can replace it by this dt, but that is equivalent to a white noise. And between friends, we, as we say, the emperor is dead, long live the emperor. The old white noise we started with, we forget, and we call the new white noise n of t. So we have arrived at that equation. We have one more minute left. Let's put it in this language. N of t dt is exactly the differential of a Wiener process. So we have du d of t is minus u of t dt plus d Wiener process. And that is a stochastic differential equation. And it is the stochastic differential equation whose solution is the Ornstein-Uhlenbeck process. What is happening is every Wiener path is being twisted and reshaped into an Ornstein-Uhlenbeck path. Now, if I divide that equation by dt, dw by dt, and I call that n again, then I get this equation, which is an equation for distributions. And this is the Langevin, the form of the equation. I've only illustrated the Langevin equation for the Ornstein-Uhlenbeck process. You have almost every other process has the same thing. If I put a U cubed up here instead of a U, an entirely different process would emerge. It would be mapping the Wiener paths into some other family of processes. So that's an introduction to those guys. Tomorrow, next time we get together, we will talk about Poisson processes, finally.
John, you have a question.
Yes, sir.
I didn't quite understand why you wrote in prime.
Well, I used to call my
equivalent line
Wiener processes by a prime. It's not a derivative of anything. It's just a metaphor. I don't want to say it's equal, because that would be prime. Realization equals realization. I don't want that. I want, as a statistical bearer,
right.
Men and women who came to the room were not coins,
right.
Males, they're not equal.
Okay. Class dismissed.